Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Race and Lanes with your hosts Rico Muhammad and Chuck Snow.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. Welcome to the Race and Lanes podcast. I'm your host, Rico Muhammad. I'm going to be joined shortly by my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow, and also we are very excited this evening that we have special guests up and on board with us this evening, Mr. Dan Baker, the Trucker's Friend. So we are definitely excited, looking forward to tonight's show. I want to thank you guys for taking time out of your schedule to be here with us. You could have been anywhere else in the world, but you took time out to call in and listen in to the podcast tonight or download the podcast at a future date, and we definitely are appreciative of that. Listen, if you have a question or if you would like to get involved in the conversation, you can press the number one that puts you in the call screen as queue for us to try to get to you and bring you up and on board. Tonight, we're going to start off as we normally do. We're going to go ahead and try to bring get a little bit of information in there, and we're going to not spend a whole lot of time on the bad news because, you know, we've talked about that ad nauseum for the past 3 or 4 weeks. So tonight, we want to try to deliver a little inspiration to you guys, maybe give you a little bit of a shot in the arm, just, you know, for us guys to just keep on keeping on. I know it's tough out there. It's tough all over for everybody. And I just want to remind everybody before I jump into this, I always like to be transparent. I like to tell not only my victories but also my failures. Today I got my PPP loan approved and funded, got it done. Actually applied last week on Friday. My bank got everything processed through, sent me everything over, and it was on my part to get the Schedule C and the supporting documents over there to them. I emailed all that stuff in this morning about 9 o'clock, and I got a phone call and the email about around 11:30, 12 o'clock in the afternoon saying that my loan and my funding had already went through and that it was already deposited into my bank account. So I want to remind everybody that's listening, there are still funds available in the PPP program. Get out there, get busy, and get started on making sure that you do all the things that you can do to try to make your business keep going and stay in business until we can push through this little epidemic that we're going through. All right, with that being said, really quickly, let's move, changing gears really quickly, going over into the DAT trend lines for this week. We have diesel fuel prices are continuing to fall. We are down by 1.6 percentage points, showing a national average of diesel fuel at $2.44 per gallon on the nationwide. Truckload van rates hit a four-year low in April. Now, I don't think that comes to any surprise to anyone. The national average van rate in April was the lowest since September of 2016, while flatbed and reefer rates hit their lowest point since early in 2017. Load-to-truck ratios were also at historic lows, but increased volumes last week reversed that trend, with freight markets entering produce season as some states began to relax their stay-at-home orders. Let's take a real quick deep dive, and we'll go over these really quickly, and we'll keep it moving, and we're going to get to our guest. So for the van rates for last week, we have coming out of the northeastern portion of the United States an outbound spot market rate for dry vans showing at 144. Moving down to the southeast and mid-Atlantic states, we're showing outbound spot market average rates at 158. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing outbound spot market dry van rates at $1.80 per mile. Coming up out of the South Central portion of the United States, we're showing average outbound spot market rates for dry vans at $1.57. And coming out of the West Coast, they're showing average spot market rates for dry vans at $1.51. Jumping over into the flatbed segment of this report, we're showing outbound spot market rates for flatbeds coming out of the Northeast at 183, average spot market flatbed rates coming out of the Mid-Atlantic and Southeastern states at 201. Coming out of the Midwest, we're showing average outbound flatbed rates at 202. The South Central portion of the United States, average outbound flatbed rates at 190. Coming out of the West Coast, showing average rates at 171. And reefer rates coming out of the Northeast, showing an average outbound spot market rate for reefers at 168. Moving down to the Mid-Atlantic and Southeast, we're showing outbound spot market rates for reefers at 181. Coming out of the Midwest, we're also showing spot market rates at 209. Coming out of the South Central portion of the United States, we're showing outbound spot market reefer rates at 192. And wrapping up, coming out of the West Coast, we're showing outbound rates at 191. And without any further ado, let me go ahead and grab my co-host, Mr. Chuck Snow. Chuck, good evening. How are you?
We're doing well. How are you, Rico?
Excited. Looking forward to looking forward to tonight's show. I think it's, you know, I think we definitely long overdue. We need to maybe hear somebody tell us that maybe the night ain't as dark as we may imagine it to be, and it's good to always hear and someone that is definitely excellent at doing such things. I really enjoy listening. Nastic sends out these driver CDs, and he has a segment on the driver CDs that Nastic sends out. And I tell you, that's the highlight of the CDs when they come out, is listening to Mr. Dan Baker's segment off of those CDs. Those are highlights when you're riding down the road, you know. He just comes at you from a good common sense approach, and everything that he's always said has always made perfect sense. So without any further ado, we don't want to belabor the point. Let's go ahead and welcome Mr. Dan Baker to the show. Good evening, Mr. Baker.
Well, hello, guys. I'm honored to be with you today. Never been on your show before, but I know y'all are super duper special people, and I'm honored you have me. What's the weather like up there?
Well, I'm in Canada. It's about 50 degrees, and we're heading for a cold spell and some snow. Some snow flurries at the end of the week.
Oh, man. Move down here to Texas, boys. God lives down here in Texas. Oh, well, hello, everybody. I'm honored to be with you today on this podcast, and especially honored to be talking with some real live mile-running, money-making professional drivers. I live way down here in Texas in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. Been working in this old trucking business for the last zillion years. I'm now over 80, 81 years old, still deeply committed to you marvelous people who are our professional drivers. You know, you guys and gals are my heroes. You pick this old country up and bring her back to yourself every day. You're the heartbeat of your nation. Because if the trucks ain't running, your country's not moving. When you drivers stop driving, your country stops living. You know that. And I know that what you do and get done is the essential necessity for everybody in Canada and the United States of America. I'll say it again. When the trucks stop moving, your country stops living. You guys and gals are the central players in what makes it all happen. I know you do a great job, and I also know you love what you do. My daddy was the driver. He used to say, "Danny boy, choose the job you love, and you'll never work a day in your life." And you know, in a world where most people hate 5 days to have 2 days they love, you guys and gals are the reason there's a country. And you know I don't have to tell this to you, but this old trucking business is something that gets in your blood. Am I right? I can remember when I was a little, you know, as a little boy, in a little town called Burke Burnett, Texas, up in North Texas, sitting on the front porch of our little house every Friday evening, just about dark, waiting, looking down the street, waiting to see my daddy's running lights come around that corner. Because when my daddy came home in that big old truck, that was the biggest part of my growing up, y'all. To me, my daddy was a true hero. He was a truck driver. He represented the biggest and the best of everything I knew, and I still feel that way. And today, as I look back on those days, I can still remember the pride I felt when my daddy came home in that truck. And so I say to each one of you, don't forget that you represent something very special to your children. You need to be proud of what you do, and your children need to be proud of what their mommy or daddy does to keep this old country on its feet. And on those days when you've been rode hard and put up wet, as we say down here in Texas, when you're tired and overworked, you can be proud for all that you do and get done, not just for yourself, but for the whole society you live in. In one of my old trucker poems, I got a line that says, "There ain't a thing you'll use today that some old trucker didn't bring. Somebody's daddy rode all night long so you could do your thing. Your thing, my thing, this country's thing, this whole thing rolls on wheels. We kept alive by these folks that drive, these folks God made out of steel. And on those days when you've been rode hard and put up wet, just remind yourself that without you and what you do, nothing would be happening for anybody. You guys and gals are the steel framework for all your country does and gets done. Mr. and Ms. Driver, I want to personally congratulate you for your decision to become a professional driver. Whether the average person knows it or not, you and what you do is the reason other people in your country can eat and work and have the families that makes everything else happen in their lives. And also know that trucking has its downside as well as its upside. We all know that. Good days and bad days. There are days when nothing's happening and you just sit. And then there are days when you can't get caught up no matter how hard you try. But you old-timers can tell the younger drivers that good days and bad days are part of the job of being a professional driver. Am I right? But you guys and gals already know them. You old-timers have been out there for how many years? I call you the old moss backs. Been around so long, you got moss on your back. You the mile-running, money-making, moss-back drivers who give pride and meaning to this great profession. And as I say, you've been there and you've done that. And then I also know that the trucking has a new generation of younger drivers who don't think like you older drivers think. They often don't seem to be as committed and dedicated to their work as you older guys and gals are. But let me tell you something. In this day and time, the new generations entering our workplace, we older, more experienced drivers need to lend a helping hand to the upcoming younger folks. These younger folks are smart. They're energetic. They want to do good. And your help and encouragement can go a long, long way toward helping them get a clear idea of what a real professional driver is really like. But I want to tell you that this generational changeover is a big thing. It's really changing our workplace. It's changing our world. There's a lot of real changes going on you need to be aware of. We're changing from the old work ethic to a newer what we call leisure ethic. From deferred gratification to immediate gratification, from internal commitment to external observation, from loving your work to tolerating your work. Boy, that's different. From low-tech to high-tech, from eye-to-eye to voice-to-voice. We're also changing from that old kick-butt-take-names, demanding, intimidating approach to a more encouraging, friendly approach. We've gone from recruiting new drivers to inviting new drivers. We've gone from telling to asking, from old hard-nosed approach to the more friendly, interested approach. Hey, folks, things are softening up. We're getting easier and less demanding. Today, we're not interested in just your driving skills. Listen to me. We're not just interested in just your driving skills. We're interested in your people skills. How you get along with other people didn't used to be a big thing. But today, your people skills, how you get along with other people, are becoming more and more important. I remember that old saying that goes, people don't remember what you say or what you do as much as they remember how you made them feel. Over the years, I've taught all kinds of driver courses on getting along with other people. And in this day and time, that's really huge. Like, for instance, Mr. and Ms. Driver, learn to be the first one to look other people in the eye and be warm and kind and friendly. Put a smile on your face. Learn to use their name, not their nickname. Call them what their mama called them. Learn to say please and thank you. Learn to ask them how they're doing. Show a little interest in other people. The more you smile, the better your day's going to be. You learn that in Sunday school, y'all. Our business is changing, and my advice to you is that you think about changing with it. This old trucking business is changing from just the roads and the loads and the routes and the rates and the maps and the phones and the fuel to mamas and daddies and husbands and wives and sons and daughters. We're changing from just trucking to people. And you marvelous drivers out there are the ones who make it all happen. If you stop, the country stops. And though lots of folks don't know that, I do, and lots of other people do, so we take our caps off to you and hope that this little talking of mine is worth your time. In closing up today of my little part on this program today, I'd like to do one of my poems. Is that okay if I do that, guys?
By all means.
Absolutely.
One of my old poems that I've known for years and wrote it years and years ago goes something like this. It's called "My Daddy's Just a Trucker." It is his turn next in Sunday school class to tell him what his daddy did, because the lesson that day was on the way that daddies love their kids. One kid's daddy was a doctor. Another was a CPA. The teacher said their daily bread was bought with their daddy's pay. And the teacher looked at this little guy. He could tell he's about to cry, and he figured something must be wrong. So they quietly asked him why. And a little guy with tear-filled eyes said, "Y'all have all the luck, because your daddies are rich, and they drive big cars. Mine just drives a truck." The old teacher spun his wheelchair around, and he grimly faced that class. He said, "I taught you well, but I burn in hell for all that statement passed. You kids see me as a Sunday school teacher, just a cripple with a lesson plan. But down inside of these twisted legs are the bones of a trucking man. I was a high-rolling, hammer-stomping, pill-popping fool till the ice on Interstate 10 took the finest old rig that a bank ever bought to the bottom of the Rio Grande. And ain't much to tell about what come next. That's the old wheelchair I ride. And now and then I teach this class, so the Lord will know I've tried. And I've tried, young fellas, I've tried real hard just to pay for all I've done. But I'm going to close this good book now, and I'm going to talk to this trucker man's son. He's a trucker man, boy, do you hear me? Don't give me that hangdog look. Your daddy's the gear jamming king of the road. He's a winner in any man's book. Who feeds you, boy? Does the grocery store? Does the fast food joint down the street? Or some 18-wheeler running all night long, bringing home every bite you eat? There ain't a thing you'll use today that some old trucker didn't bring. You see, somebody's daddy rode all night long so you could do your thing. Your thing, my thing, this country's thing, this whole thing rolls on wheels. We kept alive by these folks that drive, these folks God made out of steel. You just can't jam gears for 30 years without learning a thing or two. And if a country don't move, then a country don't eat. And, son, that brings me back to you. The next time you talk about your daddy, you understand, boy, you're talking about the man. You're the son of a hard-headed, proud-thinking hoss who just don't fit most folks' plans. So don't tell me your daddy's just a trucker. He's the man that takes this country where it goes. And I just hope that down inside you'll someday feel that pride that I used to feel pushing that whole road." And the old teacher seemed to lose his concentration. I could see the memories flooding to his brain. His eyes were fixed a million miles away from where he sat there as that old driver slowly spoke his inner pain. He said, "I don't know what they'll ever say about me. Let them call me what they want to fit their plan. I just hope they write the truth on my gravestone. And more than anything, I was a trucker man." And I'll never know what happened to that teacher. Just a wounded angel grounded from the road. A trucker man that taught me that my daddy was the finest man that this trucker man will ever know. To be proud of who we do, what we do, and to be proud of who we are. That's what this old business is all about. And I thank you.
That's definitely inspirational. We definitely appreciate those words.
Thank you, sir.
I love it. I've actually had the privilege of hearing that before, and I just that one gets me, and I got tears in my eyes, to be honest with you.
Well, thank you.
Thank you so much. That was really those words are beautiful.
Well, I'll sit next to you for the rest of your program, and I'll stay shut up. But if you want to ask me any questions, I'm here.
Well, no, you know what? You did mention something. I just want to. I heard a great line one day, listening to the Trucker Channel, and they're talking about the young millennials coming into the trucking industry, especially in the operation side. And an old time driver called in, and he said, "As old timers, we need to learn what these people don't know." And I thought that was.
Boy, that's well said. You gave me a whole nother poem. Man, we need to learn what the young folks don't know.
Yeah. Woo,
that's really good, man. That's really good. Man. Oh, these drivers are such special people, aren't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And you're with them a lot more than I am now, and you do such good work up there, you guys. My heavens above.
You know, these are people that are these are dedicated to their passion, and you know, I really do want to see things change. You know, up here in Canada, I don't know, it probably varies from state to state, but when they put advertisements out, it doesn't even go as skilled labor; it goes as general help. It's ridiculous. You know,
yeah.
Men and women are steering 80,000 pounds of iron down the road in all sorts of adverse conditions, and you tell me that's not skilled labor? That's
and all they got to do is park their trucks, and the nation closes down.
Well, yeah,
you know,
that's been proven time and time again.
Oh boy, you're right.
Yeah.
Mm.
You know,
well,
we've all
got the same passion, don't we?
Of course, yeah. That's why we're all on this show. The big issue has been as far as shutdowns. You know, when I was, and I've mentioned this before on the show from time to time, when I was a little boy and things were different, and most drivers were members of the Teamsters Union. This is prior to deregulation. When the Teamsters went on strike, you couldn't get anything. You know,
yeah.
I remember you couldn't get a guitar pick, and one of my father's friends bought a new Buick, and we went for a ride in it, and it didn't have a radio. And my dad started, saying, "Well, you're too cheap to get a radio." And he said, "No, the Teamsters are on strike, and the radios haven't come in, but I needed my car." And, you know, it just shows you that things have changed, and we need to work with the changes. That's part of the the world is evolving constantly, and I think that there are people out there trying to pin blame on this economic situation that parts of the trucking industry find themselves in, and I don't think you can blame anyone. I think it's just, you have to accept what it is and try to work with it, and I think most truckers are pretty adaptable. I've talked to dozens and dozens of them in the last 4 weeks, especially calling into our recruitment line, which I do man frequently, because I love talking to these guys and girls. And I got to tell you, you know, there's people that will not be employed in their particular areas of work for a long time, and they're looking for other opportunities.
Yeah.
And those are the people that are, they're not out there protesting, the auto companies saying, put us back to work for other types of work. And I think that, I think that's what people have to do. What do you think, Ed?
Oh, yeah, yeah. You know, the thing that I see today is it's a wonderful time for people to relook at the whole driving profession as a way of life. I mean, this is a special, special profession. And you got to be special, special people to make it work. But, the finest people I know in our whole country, both of our countries, are drivers, truck drivers. They're understanding, they're patient, they're careful. You know, they pick our country up and bring her back to herself every day. And if you park the trucks, we just close down. But nobody seems to appreciate that.
Well, they do when all of a sudden, in the last 6 weeks or so, the trucking industry got some of the appreciation that it deserves, and it's always deserved. Unfortunately, as soon as they find a cure or a vaccine or things go back to some degree of normal, that will all be forgotten and will be. I still know on the late night American news, you have the 1-800 sue a trucker advertising. So that hasn't stopped. And I was kind of hoping, nothing bothers me more, because if there's anybody that's done damage to the entire trucking profession, it's that group of unscrupulous lawyers and the juries and along with them that have gone and caused this happen. So many trucking companies in the United States have gone out of business as a result. It's not funny. And this is
an
interesting business. And this is part of our big issue in the trucking industry.
Yeah. Oh yeah. Now, do you guys go to NASDAQ down in Texas? National Association of Small Truck Companies.
Yeah, of course.
That's a great bunch of guys, and you know, I always love those old drivers that show up at NASDAQ. You know,
yep.
Boy, they're the real thing, man.
Oh yeah, you know, people with 4.6 million miles of safe driving.
I know, safe driving.
4.6 million miles.
Impossible. I get to introduce them every year, me and old Buster, you know, and some of that. Just last year we had a 6 million miler, and I just couldn't get it. He really had 6 million miles, really. And then we had a gal there that had 5.2, and I just couldn't get over it. You know, these are the real people God made on a good day, you know. And people look down their nose at truck drivers, and boy, that's going to come to an end one of these days.
Well, yeah. You know, with the lack of respect that the truck industry gets, you know, we get it from everywhere. And I was just reading something the other day, how much worse than ever we've got a shortage of parking spots on, you know, in areas all over the U.S., but especially in the Northeast where it's very congested. People want their product. They don't allow an area for the truckers to park and eat and have the rest and go to the bathroom. You know, it's ridiculous.
Yeah. It's terrible. It's just terrible. And I look at what they do, and then I look at what they put up with. And I think, who would do that on purpose? But they keep on trucking.
Yeah. But as the, you know, I think the shortage of drivers will continue because, you know, unless something else changes. And one of the things that might change it is, you know, there may be a change in our economy where people aren't as apt to do, you know, do business travel, things like that. That will make people available. But, you know, truck driving, I've road tested hundreds and hundreds of truck drivers in my life. And there are, and I've met a lot of them that are skilled truck drivers, and they do it beautifully, but they don't drive with their heart. They're not passionate. It's a job.
That's well said. You just made my day. They don't drive with their hearts, and you got to drive with your heart. And I love that.
You know, it's just these people that are doing it for a job, and God bless them. They, you know what? They're doing a great job out there. But they'll be the first to tell you that they would love to take another job because they miss their wives, they miss their children, they miss sleeping in their own bed. It's not an easy job.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
And especially now. You know, never been told.
But then there are those guys who are married to a good woman who loves her driver as a trucker as much as she loves him being home, you know. And those are the ones that last forever, you know.
Yep. As a matter of fact, sometimes they have difficulties when the driver retires and he comes home because that's a problem. He's never had him home in 50 years, and now
go get another truck and drive job. Boy, that is so true, yeah. Oh boy,
I got a question for you, Mr. Baker, if you don't mind. One of the things that we have been talking about here lately, because relationships makes all the difference in the world in this business, especially in times like now. And for people that, what are some tips that you might be able to share with us that helped you over the years with helping you to build relationships? Because sometimes some people, we've been telling everybody listening, hey, go out, build relationships, cultivate those relationships with people. And you said a mouthful a little earlier when you were talking about look people in the eye and talking, you know, to people. But I'm just curious, as long and as an illustrious of career as you've had, I know that you have built tremendous relationships within this industry. What are some different tips that you have used to help you? Because you got some people out here that may be shy, they don't consider themselves to be a people person. You know, things of that nature, just trying to maybe give someone some inspiration or some tips to let them know that it may not be as intimidating as they are making it out to be.
That's so
what are some
true.
Things that you, what are some things that you might be able to share with us?
And listen, if I knew the answer to that, I'd have flown up there in my Learjet. but just let me say this, where I work in the trucking industry, work with a lot of trucking companies, you know, big and little. And I think that the key player to working with the drivers are the driver managers, you know, the dispatchers. And I spend a lot of my life trying to train and teach and coach the people that train and teach and coach the dispatchers, because the dispatcher is not a trucking guy. He's a people guy. But most dispatchers don't know that. They just, well, get them rolling, get them paid, and get them home, you know. And that's the old thing. But a good dispatcher, I know dispatchers that have 40 drivers on their board, and they know each one of them by name, and they send them Christmas cards, and they look after them, and they know their kids' names, and there's no turnover on that board. Nobody leaves him. And then the guy sitting next to him will have 40 drivers on his board, and he's got a 45-50% turnover, you know. And it's just how people feel. People don't remember what you say. They remember how you made them feel. Does that make sense?
100%.
Absolutely.
Myself, you know, where you have a dispatcher that the drivers love, and they will do anything. I mean anything for that dispatcher because they love them.
If he's a good dispatcher. If he's an asshole, you know, then you've got turnover, you know.
Yeah.
But if he's a really good dispatcher and he loves his drivers, you know, the drivers never leave him. It's amazing how that is. And y'all see that more than I do.
That's, as a matter of fact, some dispatchers will even have a following. So they will, if they leave a company, the drivers or owner operators will go with them because that's their guy.
Absolutely. You see that more than I do, don't you?
Well, yeah. You know, he's a guy that doesn't leave them stranded on a Saturday or a Sunday. He works with them to solve a problem, whether it's a mechanical problem or it's a shipping problem, whatever it is. It's all.
And if he's got a driver on the road out there that's down, he don't go to bed till that guy's fixed, you know?
Yeah.
Those are the great dispatchers. You're right. I think so much of the trucking thing today is built around the dispatchers, and I think we ought to have a college for dispatchers. Well, I think some companies do, you know. But I think that's the big training area for all of us today. And I'm sure you guys do more of that kind of training than I do. Y'all deal with a lot of small trucking companies, and that's where the relationships are much more intimate, aren't they?
Yeah,
they
absolutely certainly are. You know what? The small truck companies, as you know, they are the backbone of our economy.
Oh, I agree. No, I thoroughly agree. They're what it's all about. You talk to a driver who's driving for a company that's got 400 drivers, 1,000 drivers. Nobody knows anybody, you know. But even in those big companies, there'll be a few dispatchers. They got 50 or 60 drivers on their board, and they'll know every one of those drivers, and they treat them like they're children, you know. And they don't have any turnover on that particular board. And so it's trucking is the people business. You know, it ain't the trucking business. It's the people business. And you guys know that better than I do.
Yeah, it's so true. It's all about
I feel like I joined a family tonight. Y'all are just very special. I appreciate you inviting me.
Well, I appreciate you coming on the show because, you know, it's funny. The harder business works at taking the human equation out of business and replace it with technology, it always refers back to the relationships when things mess up.
Absolutely. You're absolutely right. It's person to person. You're absolutely right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Well, guys, I'm going to let you go. I just appreciate you having me on so much.
Well, if anybody, before we go, if any of our listeners have any questions for Dan Baker, it's your chance to press one. This is the real Dan Baker. You know, I actually got some calls in. Did you find a guy named Dan Baker and you and Rico are having him on the show? And I said, no, this is the real Dan Baker. The guy that, you know.
I love it.
And, you know, you just bring a different dimension into trucking, which is badly needed.
Thank you. Well, it helped that my dad drove, and it helped that I remember him coming home and how precious that was in my life, you know. And Daddy quit driving after a while, and he became a professional Boy Scout executive. And so he went from trucking to Boy Scouting, you know. And the two have a lot in common because they're in the people business, you know.
That's right.
And a lot of drivers don't realize that basically they're in the people business, you know. And
yes.
Anyway, if anybody's got a question for me, just tell them to ask me.
Well, we don't have anyone in the queue right now. I think everybody's just listening in. We definitely appreciate you for taking time out of your busy schedule to come on board with us and share some things. If someone wanted to listen to some of your stuff that you put out, where are the places that they can look to find you? I know that NASA puts you on their driver CDs, but are there any other places we can find some of your material?
Vertical Alliance uses me a lot. They use all my stuff, and they put it out, you know. And so Vertical Alliance is that big outfit down here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area, and they're very close to me. But if you ever want somebody to talk to me, you tell them to call me. Because I'm 81 years old, and I'm kind of off the road, you know. I'm not out doing speaking engagements anymore because I just got tired of that. Crawling on planes will kill you. And so I'm 81. I got money in the bank, and me and Mama are in this lovely retirement home, and I'm spoiled rotten.
Hey.
And you guys are welcome to call me back anytime. If you want me to do another little thing, you just call me.
Well, wait a minute. We do got somebody that does have a hand ready.
Okay.
Questions. Let's grab them real quick. Caller from 704 area code. You're up and on board. What's your name and where you calling from?
Hey, Rico. This is Jim Bauman in Charlotte. I've talked to you before.
Hi, Jim. Yes, sir. I remember you.
Yeah, I wanted to ask Chuck something, Chuck, if you don't mind.
No, not at all.
Okay, but what do you think? You know, I'm paying very close. You know, I'm for all for free market. You know, I don't want the government setting any kind of rate for brokers or carriers or anything like that. So I was originally against that DC. I mean, I didn't join it, but I was sort of fascinated with all these protests. And so that guy named Rick Santiago, that's especially the DC protests, he got President Trump's attention, which I thought was pretty interesting.
Yeah.
And I read that after deregulation, or when they deregulated, they were supposed, the brokers were always supposed to be sharing the true rate, the gross revenue, so that the carriers would know, you know, that they weren't getting, so both the shippers and the carriers would know that the broker's making an honest living, you know, like 16-20% margin. And I think, so we got this other guy. What's the guy of the TIA? What's this guy? I've been slandering that son of a bitch all over the freight wave. What's his name?
Voltman.
Right.
So he's coming up with all this bullshit that the brokers are only making 16% margin. So I told him on there, I said, that may be true if you lump all of the rail and the ocean and the freight together, that you maybe that 16%, I still doubt that even then, but that could be true if you lump in all that. But I said, let's look specifically at the spot market margins that are for the loads posted on DAT and truck stop, and he shut up.
Mm-hmm.
He wouldn't say a thing.
Right.
So that's actually going viral, by the way, on the freight waves. If you look, they tried to bury that story about
really?
Getting interested. Yeah, if you have to look several pages deep, and then you have to click several comments, and that thing's got like 5,000 hits already. It just had only 1,000 when they posted it yesterday.
Is that right? Wow.
So my question, Chuck, my question to you is, as an owner of a fairly large trucking company, what is your opinion about, because you've got do you have a brokerage too, or I'm guessing you do, right?
No, I do not own a trucking company. I'm just a bullshitter. I go around teaching and coaching and teaching seminars on people skills, and I'm not deeply into the truck. I'm with truckers all the time, and I work with 80 or 90 trucking companies, but I'm not a trucker, you know? And so I deal with the people side of it. And I know that people is a lot more important than machinery, you know?
How about anybody's opinion there? Even your Rico, how about your opinion? What about sharing the so as much as I'm for the free market, I do agree. I would like the brokers to share their gross revenue. I want to see their revenue from the shipper on that rate confirmation sheet.
Well, actually, I'm gonna defer to Chuck in just a second because Chuck can speak to some of that what you just said. But there is a law on the books that, and I was trying to see if I could find it really quickly. But there is a law on the book that says that you can request the actual rate that the broker charged for that shipment. Good luck getting it because they may just tell you the pound sand and you may ruin that relationship. So it's one of those catch-22s with actually getting that information. So with that being said, you know, there is a regulation and there is a law out there stating that they must share that information. That is actually something that is written into the law. Whether, like I say, but good luck trying to be able to achieve and get that information from your broker or whoever else that you're doing business with. Chuck, maybe you can enlighten us a little bit more on some of that as well.
I'd love to because I was actually, we touched on this the other day. I was on Kevin Rutherford's show and I touched a little bit on this. We have a free market, first of all, okay? And free means free, and you don't have to take that load from that broker. I think that what's going on right now is you've got people that are suffering financially. They're looking for somebody to blame, and there's a group that have been pinning it on the brokers. And I think that it's wrong, and I'm not just saying that because I wear a broker's hat as well as a trucker's hat. I think it's incorrect. I think that I know for a fact the number of is way out. The first of all, the steamship guys, we actually touched a little bit of that business at one point, and it was so bad for numbers that we were moving some containers a week, and it was so bad that my son and I just looked at each other and said, shut this stuff down now. This is not worth it. Quite often, there are some loads that you will make some good money on. There are a lot of loads that a broker loses money on. Nobody talks about that. And what happens is we get dropped by a carrier because carrier, you know, truck can't make it. You're stuck in traffic. You've got to find that truck in L.A. or in Houston or wherever, and you need to pay more money than what you're getting. And that happens all the time, or you will lose that customer. Customers today are very, very smart. They are smarter than they have ever been, and they have access to data that has never been available before. Truckers now have to share information, and shippers know how much a load pays from New York to Dallas. And they quite often, an awful lot of them, and this is on the spot market, will say to the brokers, you need to find me a truck for $1,600 or whatever it is. And it's the shippers that are telling the broker what to do. And it's up to the broker to have strong enough relationships with his truckers where he can say, listen, Jim, I'm going to send you to Dallas in New York, but once you're in Dallas, I get you a real good load back home because I've got a customer there, and be able to do that. And that's how these people are able to make this work. The spot market is all over the place. No good freight ever hits the load board, and that's what we need to keep remembering. Those are all the relationships. The only good freight that ever sometimes hits the load board is the Friday afternoon at 6 o'clock when there are no trucks and stuff through. Those ones will hit a load board, but you can't live on this stuff. It's very, very difficult. So I think there's a lot of pent-up frustration. That gentleman got an audience with President Trump because his timing was perfect. The President of the United States had to pay homage to the trucking industry and had a meeting with somebody. That doesn't mean anything. Let's see what happens as a result of the meeting. That President of the United States meets with people from various industries day in, day out. That's part of his job.
So, go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, I usually agree with everything you say, and I'm grateful you're on there. But this, in this one thing, I have to. The only thing that goes through my head is that shippers and people that need freight moved with their contracts, they're not going to Schneider National and saying, "Oh, we see freights moving for 85 cents a mile from Charlotte to Milwaukee, so you need to drop your rates down," because that shipper knows that Schneider will go bankrupt at that rate, so they're not going to do that. They don't want that short-term gain, only to end up 6 months from now with no capacity and much. So, but yet on the broker side, that is happening, where they're selling that lane for about 80. I mean, I won't haul it because I'm financially well off, where I can sit for an entire year, and I have been largely sitting it out. I'm lucky where I have the house paid off, the truck paid off, the trailer paid off, the cars paid.
Yeah,
so I literally have no monthly expenses. So I won't even entertain that kind of rate at all. But yet, I mean, I have a hard time believing that shippers would be okay with brokers paying such a low rate, knowing that that's going to kill the capacity during the upswing. They're going to end up paying $3 a mile again. I have a hard time believing shippers are that naive.
Let me understand something. Your shipping department reports to finance, okay? Your finance people report to the shareholders. What are the shareholders interested in? Let's talk about them. They're interested in money, okay? Return on investment. Unfortunately, we live in this world, okay? These people don't really care about the health and well-being of our profession. We do, but they don't. And they will, their job is to get the best price for the best service that they possibly can. Yes, there are some that have contracts with J.B. Hunt and Schneider and Swift, and some of them even have contracts with us and with C.H. Robinson and all the rest of them. And those are, some of them are real ironclad contracts, because they don't want to be hung out again having to pay $4 and $5 a mile like what we saw in that 6 month period. A lot of them learned a lesson, and they learned that they needed to tie up the capacity they need, and they do it by a contract, and that protects them. And when we were on our contract freight, during that time, we had to pay out an awful lot more money some days than what we got, because we had to honor our contracts. We couldn't very well call those customers and say, "Well, today it's going to cost you $6 a mile instead of $2.20," because they would have sued us, and we wouldn't have those customers today. So there's a lot more to the brokerage world than people understand. And one of the biggest problems we have, and I mentioned this to Kevin the other day, the biggest problem we have is brokers and truckers do not understand each other's business. And it's a huge issue. I'm always trying to explain to our people the trucker's perspective, because we wear two hats. And I will always say to somebody that's come from another company, no, that's not how we do it here. We look at things a little bit differently because we're carriers too. And so often people will say, "Geez, Chuck, where I work, we didn't act like that." And there is some of that. But I'm finding more and more brokers that I talk to are really starting to get it as far as the relationship they have with truckers. They really get it, because they're nothing without that Rolodex of good truckers. That's what keeps them in business. That's their inventory. Nobody wants to hurt their supply, because without supply, you can't meet your demand.
One thing I want to interject real quickly, one of my favorite things that I pulled from actually our special guest, Mr. Dan Baker, one story that I heard him say, and it stuck with me so perfectly. He told a story one time about an old man out on the farm. He had a help wanted sign. An old fella came up to him and asked him, he said, "Well, how much will you pay me?" And the old farmhand, he told the man, "Look, I'll pay you." Now, I may be butchering the story, Dan, but you correct me if I when I screw it up pretty bad. But the old, the old but but the, but, the, But the old foreman, he told me, he said, look, I'll pay you whatever, exactly what you're worth. And the old guy walked off. He said, oh, I won't work for that chief. One thing that we got to do as us having our own business, I understand, like, Jim, you just said you're in a financial position where you don't have to necessarily haul for the cheaper freight or whatever. And one thing that I'm imploring everybody to do, and it's real easy for us to get into this whole bickering thing back and forth about the brokers, this, that, and the third. But at the end of the day, what we have to remember is we are in business. We started our own business, which means we made a decision that we want to be responsible for our own destiny. And that's a serious commitment. And that commitment starts with not just being subservient or relegating yourself strictly by working with brokers. If the majority of us feel like we're getting screwed or getting shafted by the broker, well, let's not deal with the broker. Let us go and to get the training that we need in order to improve ourselves and our business. How many people that are out there doing all this complaining and all this protesting? How many webinars are they on with learning how to do sales techniques, with learning how to build relationships, with learning how to make cold calls, learning the different nuances. Instead of all of the energy that we're putting forth and complaining, I'm just a one truck guy too. I understand. I feel the pain of. I had someone call. Matter of fact, true story. Like I said, I'll share my successes and my failures. Last week, I didn't even tell you about this, Chuck. My turbo grenaded on me in Charlotte, right there on 85. Turbo grenaded on me. Truck went down. Had to get it over to the shoulder of the road. Well, I had to pay for towing to get my truck back to Atlanta. I'm under a load. I got to go rent a truck because I'm committed to my customers that I'm going to deliver this. Okay, I'm getting it late, but I had to go rent a truck. Well, if you know anything about going to Penske and renting trucks, it's not cheap. I mean, it's a $5,000 deposit plus whatever it costs to rent the truck, and you got to have that without. I mean, they're not cutting no deals to anybody or anything. If you don't have that, then you know you can pound sand, you can go somewhere else, but you got to have that in order to rent a truck from Penske. And you know what I'm saying? But you have to. If we are in business, you have to be prepared to be able to. And I know that's a tough pill to swallow at times. Look, I needed that. When I got approved for that PPP loan today, hell, I needed every dime of that money. I needed every dime of that money because, it was a little touch and go for a minute there. But this is why some of the things that we keep trying to talk about, hopefully, you know, I think that the people that are listening to our show, I think that we kind of get it. And I think that we're trying to feel our way through this whole thing to put the tools in our tool belt to give us to prepare us to go do what it is that we need to do, not just sit around and complain about what the brokers are doing and what they're. We have to take a good, long, hard look in the mirror and say, to hell with what everybody else is doing. I'm responsible for me and mine. What am I doing to separate myself to put myself in a better position? And I think if more of us took that attitude, I think there would be a lot less belly aching going on. And then because guess what? If you start to build relationships and you get some stuff secured, then you got relationships with certain companies and you got a friend in the industry that may have relationships in their part of the area where they are. And guess what? If you know, my old granddaddy told me, well, if my friend over there got some apples and I got some sugar and another friend over there got some flour, well, hell, if we get together, we can have some apple pie. So, you know, we gotta learn how to use what we got to get what we need. You know, that's my thing that I'm offering up to us, is for us to be more, to try to be more positive, to try to be more creative. And I'm not saying that there are not things within our industry that need to be addressed, but there are things that we absolutely things that we can do to take control over whatever it is that's illing us if we just take the time to do that hard work to do that, to separate out. While we got time, while the country may not be moving as quickly as it is,
we should maybe be taking this time to see what it is that we can improve about ourselves and about our service offering so that we can differentiate ourselves from all of the other Joe Blows out there and build those relationships with local companies, with local businesses that we might be able to service and gain some things to where we can insulate ourselves from the wilds of what's going on out there in the world right now. And that's my humble offering to everybody. Well said.
Well, Rico, I would love it if you I'm basically totally ready to try to get some direct customers. I live in Charlotte, you know, with Dryvan. So if you have an old archive show about how to do that, you know, I've read that you have your own. Now I'm curious how you got those. I don't want to back. I'm trying to honor the broker's things I signed and not back solicit.
One of the things you definitely do, Jim, do this. I take it you got a LinkedIn. You got a LinkedIn account, right?
No, I did. I got rid of Facebook, LinkedIn, and Twitter couple years ago.
Facebook is fine, but you absolutely positively have to have LinkedIn. And the reason that I say you absolutely positively have to have LinkedIn, because a lot of times right now, guess what? Cold calling is I'm not saying that it's dead, but you have to have another way to get in, because these shipping managers and these people that are in these departments that deal with the shipping, they're getting bombarded with phone calls. They're getting bombarded with them, and so a lot of times, if you get someone on the phone, if you actually get lucky enough to get someone on the phone, then you have to have your tongue got to be so silver to where you get their ears to perk up enough to get somewhere with them. Whereas if you got LinkedIn, you have a way of establishing a relationship, and you can start to feed. Like you can just start just doing simple little things such as find out what it is that their company does, and find something somewhere that relates to what it is that their company does, like a news clip in a magazine article or something like that, and send it to them. And just do different little things that will help a person, so that now you may be able to get them to respond, you may be able to get them to link up, but find different things with industry that you are looking for to find a way to build a relationship. We have to find different ways to build those relationships, but LinkedIn is social media for professionals. That's why LinkedIn is absolutely critical. You have to have LinkedIn. I can't say that enough. You have to have LinkedIn. And
I agree.
And that's kind of like the bottom floor of being able to get into some certain situations to meet people, because right now, you know, the trade industry is gone right now. They're doing virtual trade shows right now, but you're not able to have that face-to-face interaction with anyone right now. And so the only way that I know of that's practical to get in contact with anybody on building a relationship on that method is LinkedIn.
So, Rico, on LinkedIn, how do I identify shippers, like if around my zip code or even Charlotte itself? Is there a way to do that on LinkedIn then?
Yep, absolutely. You can put in your city. You can put in the industry. You want to join different industry groups. You want to see, man, I have not been paying attention to the clock. So I want to, Jim, stay on board. Everybody stay right where you are. I want to take time. Okay, Dan dropped. So I wanted to take time to tell him thank you, and I appreciate him for coming on to the show. So Chuck, before the recording ends, Chuck, go ahead and tell everybody how they can get to you and meet you and get in contact with you. And Jim, stay right where you're at. We're gonna come back. And the other caller that's got a question, stay on board. If you got a question, we're gonna answer your question as well.
You can email
me. Go ahead, Chuck.
Chuck@traffix.com, or give me a call at 1-800-388-4352, my extension, which is real important, extension 203, or reach me on Instagram, send me a private message, Chuck Snow, CEO.
Right. And so, Jim, back to you. What I was saying was LinkedIn is a great way. You can try mailing. I don't know how successful mailing would be right now. You can try doing like some postcards or something
to get to people. But LinkedIn is absolutely positively critical to trying to get people. Now, how do you find them? Well, you can find them based on there are different categories on LinkedIn that you can look at. Like if you are doing whatever your industry is, look for the people that are shipping the things that goes on your mode of transportation. Like for instance, I'm in reefer. Well, there's a frozen food association that's on LinkedIn. There's all kind of different food stuff associations. So you got to start to seek out those people. And you can honor the broker solicitation. I'm pretty sure you got brokers that you have dealt with that has been over a year since you dealt with them. Well, if you technically there's no relationship there anymore if it's been over a year. So
asking? Did you do that, Rico, with some of the ones you got acquainted with through broker? If a year passed, you say, you know what, I'm going to go now that it's been a year. I don't feel bad about trying to knock on that door since I know they're there.
Well, there was a brokerage. There's a very large brokerage, national broker, that I had a falling out with. We had a falling out. Me and the broker at the time had tempers got the better of both of us, and so that relationship was severed. So in my eyes, I waited over a year after I did business with that broker, but after that point, if there was someone that was in that book of business that I have access to, that I service, then I think, you know, that was fair play. I'm no longer dealing with that broker.
I see. Good tip.
I don't have any relationship with that broker at all whatsoever. So after a year, according to the contract, the letter of the contract, after 1 year time, all is fair game. And one thing that even one thing that Hank Seaton definitely tells us that we should be careful of when we're signing these broker contracts is that we have to be mindful of when we agree to that back solicitation. Well, does that mean that now I'm barred from approaching, say for instance, if I picked up something in California? Okay, I'm not going to go see that particular shipper, but they have another division in my backyard. So if I sign a back solicitation, so now does that mean that I'm barred from approaching the shipper that's in my backyard, that they may be under the same company, of what it is that we agree into in those back solicitation agreements now that are in some of these broker contracts? Because you don't want to cut your nose off to spite your face as well. So, but just get creative. Get creative about there. There's all kind of ways to find people. You can ride around and see different places that you've been to in your city. Just ride around. You may not be able to go in and talk to nobody now, but guess what? Now you got a business name that you can go look for on LinkedIn, and guess what? They have their employees linked under the company. That's why LinkedIn is so, because the employees are listed right there. It's almost like shooting fish in a barrel.
Okay.
We got time on you, and if we got time on our hands right now, guess what? You may not be able to, you may not find the exact contact that you want, that you need to be able to get a hold of a decision maker. But if you are skillful enough in building a relationship or being nice enough on how you handle them, you get them on the phone or even with an email or a message exchange, more than likely, they'll be more than happy to put you in contact with the exact person that you need to be in contact with.
Sounds like now's the time to, you're right, with a downturn, this is the perfect time to take that extra time and that I'm not driving and try to actually make it happen once and for all.
We gotta make sure that we are trying to be skillful on how we approach things. And Chuck just dropped as well. So if you got any more questions about that, Jim, you know, we'd love to try to help you out as much as we can. You can drop me a message on the Facebook page, or you can always, you know, jump back in with us here on the Rates and Lanes podcast.
Yeah, I'll try to give you a call again next week or listen in. And, often I'm driving, so it doesn't work too well to call because it'll keep cutting out, you know, but I'll –
if I'm home, I'll certainly try to call and reengage. I have to say, Rico, the thing I do, I still disagree. It's not anti-capitalism,
no.
In my opinion.
It's fine. It's absolutely fine that you disagree. I think that's what America's about. We got the right to disagree.
Yeah, no, I don't see what's wrong if the brokers have to put their gross revenue on there. That's not hurting. Nobody's forcing. People still aren't forcing us to take their rate, but it gives more information. I think the shippers personally would be even more pushed to do the same and reach out on LinkedIn or whatever to find more direct if they realize that the broker's getting, say, 150, and the carrier is getting 80, and that's going to run that carrier out and end up costing that same shipper $3 a mile 6 months from now. I think that knowledge is more dangerous to the broker than is let on, personally.
I get where you're coming from, but, you know, that's where we try to help educate the industry when it comes to we got to know our cost per mile. You know, we gotta know our numbers, and nobody's putting a gun to our head forcing us to take that 80-cent a mile load. I'm just saying that, and I agree with you. I understand where you're coming from. Believe me. Don't be misconstrued with where I'm coming from. Believe me, I feel the pain just like everybody else. I feel that, you know, when I'm not pulling for my customer. And when I'm out here, if I have to try to get on, try to find something on the load board or something like, look, I had a phone call today. Somebody called me. I thought maybe I'm sitting around my trucks. My truck's in the shop. I've had to pay for this rental truck for a week. Hey, let me try to offset, do what I can to offset. I got my truck posted for little local moves or power only move or something like that. Person called me with a 200-mile run. That's an empty trailer. They wanted the power only, empty mile, 300-mile run right inside of Georgia. Go up right outside of Tennessee and bring something back down the lower part of Georgia. Might have been like close to 300 miles. They only wanted to pay $100. Well, guess what? I'm not going to go get in the truck for less than $500. I'm not going to crank the ignition.
I agree.
For less than $500. I'm just not interested in doing those type of things. So, you know, I want to get to this other guy real quick. But please, by all means, get back in contact with us. We're definitely going to try to share some more information along, maybe give a training on the LinkedIn and different things you can do to help yourself find shippers and stuff of that nature.
Thank you, sir. Very cool.
Caller, if you're still there, caller from the 708, how can I help you?
Hey, how you doing, Rico?
Doing well. Who am I talking to?
Louis Bernardville out of Chicago.
All right, Louis.
Okay, so first I got to say, I think a lot of the guys, maybe they haven't been listening as long as I have, or they haven't been listening as well to you. When you spoke some years ago about truckalocity logistics and load training, getting training
right.
as a broker, and so I took the class. A lot of the guys, you're actually right. One of the first things that happened, it helped me, but it hurt me at the same time by having the knowledge. I first found out, you know, that you can request how much they're getting paid, the broker's getting paid. And a lot
Absolutely.
Of brokers right away, when I first requested it, they didn't want to tell me, and they tried to say, oh, we don't have to tell you this, and so I recited the law. I haven't done
yep.
it in a while, but this was with a major carrier that is in Chicago and down in Atlanta, and I think they got a spot in Colorado to get my trip. So they want the reason it came up for me to even ask them how much they were getting paid, I took a brand-new trailer that had never been loaded before, delivered it to the customer way down in Laredo. My driver did. The customer complained that the product, which was food, was damaged because there's some type of chemical smell going on inside of the trailer, which was just the brand new smell of the trailer. So they
mm-hmm.
wanted me to reroute the load to New Mexico from Laredo. but they wanted me to do it on my dime with no paperwork, nothing. And they said, well, you have to move this on your dime, and then we'll decide if we're going to pay you. And I told them, I said, no, that's not how this is going to work. Now, mind you, I just got out of instructor out of brokering school that day.
Right.
I said, what you're going to do is I have to eat some of the cost, you have to eat some of the cost too. So you have to, by law, tell me how much money that you got paid by the customer. And so they still didn't want to disclose, blah, blah. And so eventually they end up disclosing it. I said, listen, this is what we're going to do. I'm going to move this load for the exact amount of money that I brought it down here for. I need it on a one-sheet rate confirmation. Because whatever they were getting paid, it was a nice amount of money because it was supposed to be bad freight at that time, but they got paid pretty well. I said, I'm not going to eat this all by myself. And I ended up not eating it at all. I got over to the call customer, delivered, got the load off of me. The company didn't want to pay. They didn't want to pay the amount of money. And basically, I served them a collection letter, which I got from the brokering school. And literally, I served them the letter. I didn't even make it to the post office before I got a number to actually go cash the check. They were on it that fast. So that's why it's important for us to know how much they're getting paid. Now, take it from somebody that has one customer right now. And I did have I tried to get a second one. But J.B. Hunt and CQL underbid me before I could even turn in the rate sheet. These customers are going for the lowest amount of money that they can sometimes. Some aren't, some are. But this particular customer, he definitely was. I put in all of the I filled out the paperwork. I took it back to him. He liked my numbers. He called me back and said the next day, like, man, CQL came and offered me basically a dollar a mile type of freight. And I'm like, well, I can't compete with that. Because just like you said, I can't get in my truck for anything under $500.
Right. And we have to start doing what we got to do is the hard work that we got to start doing is we have to begin to identify freight and companies that are not so commoditized. And what do I mean by that? Well, we can't go after the big national companies like, say, for instance, post cereal, like a lot of people are like, well, maybe I can get in with a cereal company. They deliver truck loads of cereal. I know that's good freight, that's lightweight. I could probably make a pretty little penny off of that. But guess what? Every major carrier is in there, and they're in there for low amounts of money. So let's think outside of the box. Let's think about another commodity that they may put more emphasis on. We don't give a damn about the lowest rate. We want to make sure that it gets there and that it gets there intact, not tore up, not going to be in a ditch somewhere. So we have to start thinking outside of the box of thinking about things that, you know, maybe something that may be a little bit more higher value, maybe a more higher value freight. Now, what does that mean in turn? Well, we may have to, not necessarily so much specialized, but it may require you have a little bit more insurance coverage because the commodity that you're hauling is such high value. So those types of things that we have to seek out, things that may require a little extra effort on our part when it comes to the security and so on and so forth of the road. You know what I'm saying? Pharmaceuticals. It's something that is more valuable. They are more concerned with it getting there in a timely fashion and getting there in one piece versus getting the absolute best rate that they can find out here on the market. And we just got to start thinking outside of the box and start targeting those people because guess what? The problem with a lot of us as truckers is that we are solely dependent upon getting freight off of a load board. We're one trick pony. We only know one trick. We got to go teach ourselves. We got to go reinvent the wheel. We got to go teach ourselves a different skill set so that we can become more valuable not only to our company but to ourselves. And if we teach ourselves that new skill set to go out here and be able to identify those types of things, we can somewhat instantly. I'm not going to say it's going to be the be all end all. It'll cure all the problems that we are going through. I'm not saying that by a long shot. Because this country is look, we ain't never seen a damn thing like this right now. It is this,
right.
This country is completely shut down from coast to coast. We're slowly starting to open back up, and guess what? And we've talked about new technology. It's supply and demand. So you know,
yep.
I don't want to throw off on anybody that came to America from a different country and came here and started driving trucks. But we got a lot of foreigners that are in this trucking game, and a lot of these guys are moving stuff. They don't give a damn. I don't know how they got the money to do what they're doing, if they're doing anything, if they're doing everything 100% by the book, legal or illegal. I don't know that. But I do know that a lot of times when you see people hauling stuff dirt cheap and stuff that I've broken, that I've got, hey, I've been on the beneficial end of brokering freight that I had a hell of a lot more money in than what I paid. I've been on that end as well. But when I've done that, it was always someone that didn't know. We talk about building relationships, but it's not my business to run your company. It's up to you to know your numbers, to be savvy enough to know what you need, and if that's what you need to make a profit, great. Get what you need to make a profit. But we just got to take a little bit more personal responsibility when it comes to what's going on right now. And everybody's hurting. Everybody's hurting. And I think that this is giving us all a wake-up call for us all to maybe start being a lot more conservative when we do have money, to make sure that we're putting money back in our reserves, because we have gotten drunk off of just being able to do different things, and we've gotten some wake-up calls. I had a $12,000 line of credit that I just had just get shut down for no apparent reason other than COVID-19.
Right, right.
So
they don't want to take no risk.
And so sometimes, you know, I'm sitting back thinking, you know, I got a little bit of a cushion because I got this sitting over here, and then when I get this phone call, I'm like, oh, hell, now I got a dig, whereas before I was bagging. You know what I mean? It's coming with the territory. So I'm just, you know, I'm trying to share, like I said, I'm trying to be transparent in what it is that I'm experiencing and what I've been going through, and I try to share that information as best I possibly can. And like I say, we all going through it, guys and girls. We all going through it. But we got to figure out something to, like I said, we just have to figure out something to separate ourselves to get us to a point where we're not solely dependent upon dealing with these brokers that are not willing to develop a relationship with us.
And can I say one more thing? One thing I noticed, like, you know, in the load training class, they taught us to send out postcards, a welcome letter, you know, explain who you are, everything. But the one thing I realized that worked the best for me was the cold calling or just showing up. Let them see your face. Let them see your character. And they're like, a lot of them are more than willing to talk to you, even over the phone.
Yep.
Because a lot of guys think that, you know, oh, what's the chance of them giving me a chance or this or that? And that's actually the opposite. They're begging you to come and work and do the work because you left them in the strain on them.
We disqualify ourselves before we even get started. We tell ourselves no. We don't let them tell us no. We tell ourselves no. And we got to get out of it. We have to find a way to build up the courage to get out of that.
Literally, so that I don't, you know, sound like any other truck driver or broker when I call, the first thing I ask them is, you know, do you need any help moving some freight? And some of them, if they say no, all right, that's it. I mark them down. I call them back in 30 days. Just to check. And a lot of things have changed within that time. And also, just like the previous caller, I like how he said, Jesus Christ, I forgot exactly what he said about them. Jesus Christ, it was important though. About going back and talking to, you know, respecting the relationship of the broker. I'm going to tell them
right
now.
Back solicit.
Don't worry about back soliciting these brokers. Because just like the broker wants you to be loyal to him, you don't know after that phone call, he might have dropped that customer. And it happened. That's why so many of the shippers are looking for people. It's because those brokers are fly by night. And that's the one thing a customer always said to me when I call. He said, oh, so you're going to do your best, right? You're going to do this. You're going to do that. And I'm like, yes, sir, I am. I was like, you know what? And the way to prove it, I say, listen, give me your toughest load if you have a problem moving. And that's the one I'm going to get rid of. And that's
right.
When I get there.
There you go. That's what you solve a problem for.
Exactly.
Improve your worth at the same time.
Exactly. So it's like, don't worry about back soliciting them, because you're sitting there being loyal to a guy for 5 years, and you don't even realize that's not even his customer anymore. Because a lot of these brokers, when they start getting a different type of freight or freight that they feel like they can move easier, they drop that customer. If it's too hard to manage and they don't have the infrastructure, because some of these brokerages are not as big as people think they are. Some guys will just sit at home. And if it's too difficult to move that freight, they'll drop that customer or they don't answer the phone anymore. And I had two different customers, the one I talked to and then the one I'm actually with now, they both said that. They were like, man, oh, yeah, so you're going to work, huh? And I'm like, yeah, I'm going to do it. Like, it's a little bit tougher of a job, but he's paying. And this whole time during the downturn, he's only asking me to sit home maybe once or twice a week. The thing is, I'm making enough money where I'm not even feeling the effect. Having a direct customer has benefited me so much. I get to sleep better. I don't have to argue with brokers. I don't have to worry about hearing that the load is gone all the time. I don't have to deal with any of that stuff. My customer gave me a sheet of 30 customers that he had that he needs me to service. And he just he says, look, this amount of trucks, this amount of loads is what you're going to get this week. I need you to get rid of all of those. That's it. Do the job and go home.
Yep.
And
yep.
Some guys, if you can buy some, you know, and I tell people, wait till you get your customer, then decide the type of trailer you need to rent or buy. And it's like, you might not even have to get super expensive trailers. He might just need some junk trailers. The one customer, he's hauling steel. So he's going to nail everything down to the floor. Dude, you can get you about 3 junk trailers to have a trailer pool. That's what he wanted. You know, can you do a trailer pool? Yes, I can do a trailer pool. Well, I need to have at least 2 or 3 trailers up here. And all you're doing is literally picking up from him, and all his loads were going such a short distance that you can you can deadhead back and grab your next load, which is already ready for you, and the rest of the loads that are going over 300-400 miles, guess what? Broker them out.
There it is.
Plain and simple.
But you gotta be in position. You gotta put yourself in position to be able to capitalize on those things. So, Lewis, I appreciate the phone call, brother. Y'all,
yes, sir.
I'm getting ready to jump off this thing. But next week they gave me some ideas. Maybe we can start to talk a little bit more in depth on this thing, on trying to help people identify customers and what they can do to try to get in and set themselves apart. So I definitely appreciate the phone call. We'll talk at you guys next week.